Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The voices of immigrants and their stories are often muffled by politicians who paint them as undesirable siphons of America's goodwill. Media coverage of immigrants can also be unwittingly stereotypical, with image after image of handcuffed or zip-tied men, women, and children thrown into vehicles by masked agents. The repetition of such images can dehumanize the individual. Alix Dyke and Antero Garcia have given immigrants a voice on their weekly Substack publication, La Cuenta. Its focus is to tell humanizing stories about immigration. Dyke and Garcia have also launched a small-scale research project that's collecting the stories of immigrant families. It's called Testimonios de Esperanza, or Testimonies of Hope. The project is being conducted through Stanford University, where Antero Garcia is an associate professor in the Graduate School of Education. Alix Dyke is a storyteller, a filmmaker, an author, and an immigrant from Mexico living in the U.S. without legal status. We're talking to them today about their collaborations, which also include a memoir by Dyke that we'll talk about later in the program. Garcia explains the idea behind the Testimonios de Esperanza project.
The way this project came to light really starts with a recognition that right now, if we look in the media, there's a lot of, for the last couple of years, there's a lot of talk about immigrant families, immigrant communities, immigrants, oftentimes deficit negative perspectives about them. But those stories oftentimes don't actually center the voices and perspectives of immigrant families, right? And oftentimes they only show the negative side of what the media wants to portray if it's convenient for particular policies right now. And so this was really a recognition of the millions and millions of families in every state, in every city, in every classroom that oftentimes remain silent and are not given the same kind of voice to share their stories, right? So I just want to start with that's one piece. The other point of who's oftentimes missing, and this comes out of what I'm interested in terms of educational research, is young people, right? We oftentimes, as adults, have this adult privilege of speaking for the needs and perspectives of young people. And so taking those layers of marginalization, particularly immigrant children and immigrant families, are who we wanted to bring out. And then I'll let Alix talk a little bit more about like why joy is so necessary and hope is so necessary in this moment too.
Antero and I have been working, doing research and working with immigrant stories for a few years now. And for us, it has always been very urgent to put these stories in the media and for people to have access to them. But in times like this one, it almost feels urgent. It doesn't feel like a project. I feel like that urgency for people to see, well, first of all, you are being lied to. And second of all, you don't know nothing about immigrant families. You don't know nothing about us. You don't know nothing about the undocumented community, because I fully believe that what the media said has become the internal narrative that people have in their heads. And for us, it's very important that people see that there is more than all the tragedy and all the horrible things going on. And for us, people have been asking me lately, how can we help people? What is the right way to become an ally? We're trying to figure it out. The biggest thing for me is we give people space to share their truth, to share that we are so much more than those stories that have been portrayed, you know, and the stories have been sold to us and we believe and took them as our truth. I fully believe that we need these stories of hope, these stories that are going to bring us a little bit of light to get through these times.
And Antero, this is a research project, but it's not, you know, cold and laboratory type. This is one that really is bringing a lot of humanity to the forefront, as Alix was saying. So could you maybe describe a little bit about the process, who and how many and when? Can you maybe just give us the details of how you sort of see this all playing out?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So along the lines of the research that Alix and I have been doing both for our book, for La Cuenta, and now with Testimonios, this really tries to shift the power structures of how research and educational research transpire. in that traditionally someone like me comes in as a researcher and does research on people, treats them like hamsters that we study, and then we talk about them, right? And this is really trying to recognize that we're going to do research together. We're going to engage in a participatory model where everybody is bringing their expertise, which is why we don't know what's going to happen, right? This could be, hopefully it won't be, but this could be terrible because we get lots of people that kind of drive things in a different direction. But I want to name that as kind of one piece, is that we're trying to reorient how we're doing our research together. What this will look like is we're going to have up to 10 families from around the country where at least the parent identifies as an immigrant from anywhere, from any background, for however long, from any kind of status. We won't be asking about immigration status in our recruitment for this. And they need to have a school-age child that can participate, and that both the parent and the child are willing to participate, right? Consent is obviously very important if we think of how research transpires. Because of the nature of the country and safety and precarity issues that are happening right now, we are going to only meet as a group virtually throughout the year. It just does not feel like a safe time for people to travel and to convene in person, unfortunately. And so as much as these are trying to cultivate stories of hope and joy, we also want to recognize that this isn't a time when we can do that safely in person with one another. And so from the safety of people's homes and living rooms, we will meet throughout the year and have various kinds of writing prompts that we will be sharing with each other. And by the end of the project, families will decide which of those stories will be shared with the larger public in various kinds of capacities.
Well, Alex, you well know the stereotypes that we see on the media of immigrants. You know, every one of them must go. But that's because people who don't really have that personal connection with an immigrant in their life, and chances are most people listening to us today do, it's because they don't have that personal connection. And I wanted to talk to you about La Cuenta. That's a Substack that you and Antero, you co-edit every week, and it explores undocumented living through poetry, through art, through narrative, interviews with academics, with activists. Can you break down a little bit about the idea of La Cuenta and breaking down these stereotypes of immigrants across the U.S., which has been an effort that's been ongoing for generations now?
Yes. So we created La Cuenta. We were doing research, just the two of us, and that's how La Cuenta came out. And we decided that we wanted to tell the cause of what it means to be undocumented, what it means to be an immigrant in this country. And usually in the media, everybody talks about the economic cost of immigration and numbers. And we realized that what about the cost of surviving in this country as an immigrant that has nothing to do with that? What about the cost of time? What about the cost of health? What about the cost of love? What about all these costs that nobody is talking about? And that's how La Cuenta started. And how many years have we been working on La Cuenta? Is it been 4 years now?
We are coming up on the third anniversary. We have not missed a Thursday in that time.
Yeah. And we're so grateful to see the response of people, because it's very important for us that people have access to these stories, that people have access not only to what I was saying earlier, all these horrible and horrendous narratives that the media is using to distract people to the real issues. And this is something that is very urgent for me, that we fight that negative narrative about immigrants, because of those negative narratives, people don't open up and people don't care about their neighbors, and people are so intolerant, and it's so much easier to believe what the media is feeding you than actually taking the time to read these stories, to take the time to get to know the people that live next to you.
Alex Dyke is a filmmaker, author, and storyteller living in Los Angeles. We're also talking with Antero Garcia, associate professor in the Graduate School of Education at Stanford University. They are co-editors of the Substack publication La Cuenta and are collaborating on the research project Testimonios de Esperanza. When we come back, flipping the script on the costs of illegal immigration. What's the cost to the immigrants?
How do we think through these stories, these narratives together, to make clear the costs that Elise experienced, but also costs that would reflect and act as something as a mirror for readers, regardless of their immigration status when they read this.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The state of Texas says undocumented immigration costs hospitals upwards of $122 million each month. What about the costs to immigrants? Alix Dyke is an immigrant from Sinaloa, Mexico. She came from a wealthy family that lost everything to cartel violence. She overstayed her tourist visa and is living in the U.S. without legal status. She tells her story in The Cost of Being Undocumented, One Woman's Reckoning with America's Inhumane Math. She breaks down what the costs are to her of living undocumented in the U.S., the cost of time living with an uncertain future where the future is, quote, 5 minutes from now, the cost of employment working as a waitress and a nanny for cash, not able to report employer abuse, the cost of love, entering codependent relationships that often ended with threats to get her deported, the cost of mental health, dealing with layers of trauma, and the cost of health care, unable to get preventative medical and dental care. She had to go underground for invasive dental procedures and suffered permanent hearing loss. Dyke tallied up the literal costs of living undocumented, what's owed to her, the cost of her survival between 2011 and 2023. It's just shy of $2 million. The book is a memoir written with Stanford University researcher Antero Garcia. They already established a collaborative relationship with their weekly Substack publication, La Cuenta. Garcia explains how he collaborated with Dyke on her memoir, The Cost of Being Undocumented.
We spent a lot of time. Alix could talk about, you know, many of the productive arguments that the two of us had trying to figure out the right voice for this book, right? And ultimately, creating this book as a parallel project to La Cuenta, we're trying to figure out how do we properly articulate, you know, what are the real costs of being undocumented to the title of the book. And what we realized is there's so many people, again, people with PhDs, oftentimes economists, who get to talk about the cost or the burden of the undocumented community on the United States. And again, these very deficit perspectives. And maybe they'll talk about the humanitarian costs or the costs around healthcare. But they do that from this distance of talking about, you know, at any given time, 11 million people in this country. And when you talk about a big number like that, it's easy not to treat people like human beings, right, who have their own aspirations, who are more than just laborers in some kind of broad marketplace of the United States. And so as we're trying to figure out this voice, we realized probably the best way to articulate what these costs look like is to not worry about generalizability and not worry about, can we talk about a full, you know, spectrum of all of the undocumented individuals in this country, but can we tell people about one person? And can we use research to do that, right? And so that drilled us down to, well, let's tell Alix's story. And then we tried to do that in this third person point of view. Terrible idea.
Horrible.
I was talking about Alix as if she was like a video game character, or again, like as if she's not the person writing this book. And so when we realized like the best way for us to articulate this is to then tell that story from her first person point of view, right? The entire book hopefully does read to people as a memoir. That is our intent, that this is something that people can make meaningful connections to. And it is weird, right? You have a book with two people's name on it, and the book reads as I did this, right? And I experienced these things. And, you know, as somebody who is born in the United States and is an American citizen, U.S. citizen, you know, these are not my experiences that I helped write. And so the process really was, how do we think through these stories, these narratives together to make clear the costs that Alix experienced, but also costs that would reflect and act as something as a mirror for readers, regardless of their immigration status when they read this. We want people to be able to make personal connections to Alix's story. And those stories are very unique, right? Most people will not have the very similar kinds of experiences around wage theft, around partner abuse, around using illicit healthcare, right? Like in each of those chapters, those are never experiences that I would ever dream of anybody having to experience, but Alix shares those in order for us to build out this larger point of the inhumane costs that individuals labeled undocumented experience every single day in this country right now.
Well, Alix, you point out in the beginning of this book, in the introduction, that your story is not necessarily that of all immigrants, but you also point out that you were one of those immigrants who, quote unquote, came in the right way to the United States. So I'm wondering if you can maybe tell us the circumstances of your travel, of your journey to the United States, and when and how that happened.
That was back in 2012. And the reason I came to the United States was not an easy decision, but it was the only thing that would save my life and my siblings' life. During that time, the three of us, which was my older sister and my younger brother who was 9 and my sister who was 22, we had visas. So when we came, we still had a working visa, so we were able to fly. But in the process, when we got here, the years passed by and the visa expired, and that's how I became undocumented.
Antero sort of mentioned briefly some of what you had to endure. But honestly, reading this book, your story is one that's going to keep readers awake at night, because you were really put through the ringer in so many things. And whether your experiences are exactly what other immigrants have experienced, in general, I think that many people who are living undocumented in the U.S. are going to experience. You had a terrible experience when you had an infection in your mouth, and you actually ended up losing some of your hearing. Is that correct?
That was actually my first experience as an immigrant here in the United States, that I have, nothing would ever tell me that this could happen to somebody until I live it, right? So I feel like a lot of things that I went through were necessary for me to go through to fully understand what actually happens. And I was very sick. This is in my first job that I had as a waitress when I came to the United States. I didn't speak English. I didn't have no idea how the healthcare system worked, but I was struggling with a molar pain for weeks and weeks. And one day I decided to, you know what, I'm going to go to the dentist and see what they can do for me. And as soon as that dentist saw me, he was like, you really need help. And you have a huge infection going on in your molar. And if we don't treat it, this is going to go really bad. So I was like, yeah, you do whatever you need to do. Cut my head off if you need to, but just please, like, save me from this pain that doesn't let me leave. He was like, yeah, yeah, we can do all these processes that he mentioned. He said, but I need you to apply for this emergency insurance. So I was there at his office for like 2-3 hours. We were trying to figure it out alone. We were trying to apply for a healthcare. Nothing worked. So he ended up sending me home with just Tylenol. And a few months later, the pain never stop, even though that I tried to do home remedies and I watched YouTube, nothing worked. And one day after a few months, I wake up and my left ear was bleeding and I had to be rushed to the hospital. And a few hours later, I found out that my left ear hearing is so damaged that I can barely hear now. And this is a cause that I'm still paying for, that nobody would understand that undocumented people are denied of healthcare, even if it's an urgent matter.
One thing that I would like to also talk to you a little bit about, Alix, is you write that you're paying the cost of time. Your past is gone. Your present is living on a razor's edge. Your future is uncertain. After reading everything that I have read about what you've experienced, which is incredibly traumatic, how are you?
Well, that's a really hard question to answer. I'm doing the best I can. And even though sharing these stories is one of the hardest things I ever been through, even though that I've been through hell, it's very hard. But at the same time, it's very difficult to explain that it's also bringing me light and it's also freeing. And I think putting that truth for people to understand and see gives me a little bit of hope to think that maybe somebody who has had these horrible narratives about immigrants is going to understand us in a better way. That's my hope. And maybe I'm being too optimistic, but if I can bring a little bit of value to the world with these stories, I think it was worth it. Maybe that's what it makes me survive right now, because it's really hard to find light at this moment. But I'm trying the best I can to hold on to that wish, that I hope that this book makes a difference.
Antero, I'm curious whether when you were working on this book with Alex, if anything that you were workshopping through together, how much of it was new and surprising and shocking to you?
Yeah, you know, I tend to do work around equity and the ways that we can support and liberate marginalized folks in this country broadly. But it's one thing to do that work at this clinical scholarly distance. It's another thing, again, when you talk about people in generalizations as numbers, it's easy to write off randomly, as we're seeing right now, kidnap and abduct people, you know, off the streets of the United States right now, if you don't treat them and see them as human beings, right? It's another thing to then get to see people as human beings who are your neighbors, who are your family, and transform that. And so I think for me, as much as I broadly understand the stories, you know, think of my grandparents' own narratives of immigrating to this country many years before I was born, it's another thing to get to know another person, right? And I think our research is really about how closely can we get to know somebody in order to then think through what are the possibilities of empathy in 2025 is a thing I continue to wonder about as we see one xenophobic, horribly racist image or policy or action after another right now. And so the things that I remain surprised about are both the capacities and strength of Alix to endure and experience the kinds of awful things that she has in this country and still want to engage in work that seeks to better those around her, as well as I'm continually shocked by the capacity of this country to seek to do harm to people, to families, to fathers and mothers and children in this country just feels unfathomable to me right now.
Well, that's the whole process of dehumanization, yeah, and categorizing a block of individuals as something other than individuals. This book, I think, The Cost of Being Undocumented, is one way, I think, like you said, Antero, to get that point across, because until you start hearing these individual stories is when you really start realizing that these are your neighbors, these are your friends, these are your family members. I'm wondering, Alex or Antero, what kind of reaction you've already had to this book? It's already been in several hands. People have read it. I'm wondering if you have, you know, what you have heard from other people.
I think we're really proud of this book. I think I'm so honored to have this as a story that shouldn't have to exist, but that is out there. And I think Alix shares just like a really beautiful narrative that we worked on together. I think the response has been exactly what we're hoping for from the people. Right now, the people who are picking up the book are people who probably have sympathy to this cause and are interested in connecting to that, right? So we haven't gotten tons of pushback yet. That's not to say
yet
that it will happen. But I think we've been overwhelmed with the positivity, with the support, with the folks who are saying to other people that you need to read this. And that is what we're hoping. So I'm feeling really grateful in this moment around the reception of this book in a particularly dark time for the United States right now. I don't really have a different sense of things.
No, I do agree. I think I usually get a lot of hate online, and lately I've been receiving lots of love from people who really want to do a difference and want to support undocumented communities and want to support immigrants. So for now, I am very hopeful that the book is going to bring some light for what I've seen, but I'm also prepared for the negativity that at some point is going to get to us, I feel. But for now, we are feeling very supported, and we are liking the response that the book is having.
Alix Dyke is a filmmaker, storyteller, and author who lives in Los Angeles. Antero Garcia is an associate professor in the Graduate School of Education at Stanford University. Dyke and Garcia are co-authors of The Cost of Being Undocumented, One Woman's Reckoning with America's Inhumane Math. They are also both co-editors of the La Cuenta Substack that humanizes the immigrant experience through the words of artists and activists. They've also embarked on the research storytelling project Testimonios de Esperanza that involves immigrant families with school-age children. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.